shoulder then. I'm younger than that now.
I'm Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder. And coming up in just a moment, one of the most influential figures in the world in healthcare and alternative medicine.
And also, two men and two women deliver a master class on active longevity that has the social media world buzzing. Plus, the musical genius who pushed the boundaries of rock and has been called America's Mozart. And one of the first female TV comedy writers ever, this woman was a trailblazer. She went to school with Jim Morrison, appeared in a movie with Elvis Presley. She even went on a date with Lenny Bruce, and she reveals it all in her new book, Hot Pants in Hollywood, Sex, Secrets, and Sitcoms.
And we have one of the nation's top experts on caregiving. She's an author, a radio show host, and a philanthropist who is in the arts, and she says they are the key to successful aging. All that today on Growing Bolder.
He is a world-renowned pioneer in integrative medicine, personal transformation, and mind-body healing. Time magazine dubbed him the poet prophet of alternative medicine and named him one of the top 100 heroes and icons of the century. The Huffington Post ranked him the number one most influential thinker in the world in medicine.
He is the founder of the Chopra Foundation, co-founder of the Chopra Center for Well-Being, and co-founder of Jio, which is a new personal transformation app. He's a New York Times best-selling author of more than 85 books translated into more than 40 languages, including his most recent You Are the Universe, an honor to chat with Dr. Deepak Chopra. Hello, Deepak. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much.
Now, thank you for your time. And let's start with Jio, because it really is a first-of-its-kind digital platform that you describe as the Internet of Well-Being, and it is smack dab at the intersection of technology and healthcare. What makes Jio so unique?
Well, Jio, I would like to say, is the Internet of Well-Being. And today, well-being is the number one trend in the world. When we include all aspects of well-being, such as physical well-being, emotional well-being, spiritual well-being, but also other buckets of well-being like career well-being, financial well-being, social well-being, and community well-being, then well-being actually correlates with everything that happens in society, including traffic accidents, hospital admissions, crime rate, quality of leadership, social unrest or peace. All these things correlate with well-being. So today we have the technology to bring people not only great content and knowledge from experts in the area of mind, body, and spirit, but also in these other aspects of well-being. And so we have the ability to curate the best experts in all these areas. We also have the ability to quantify well-being, in other words, to measure it, and then correlate it with the quality of life. We can affect change as never before. I think the future of well-being is very good with all that we know, and that all that we can quantify, how we can use technology. This is going to be a very exciting future. I'm actually very grateful to Lake Nona for having taken Jio as their platform, but also to, in one way or another, to localize it in their community. So it's an add-on to what they're already doing, building a well-being community.
We are speaking with Dr. Deepak Chopra, folks, and it seems like nearly every major healthcare organization is pivoting as fast as it can from sick care to well care. It's all about prevention these days. What is the Dr. Chopra prescription for overall health and well-being?
Well, I think everybody should start their day with at least four intentions: a joyful, energetic body, a loving, compassionate heart, a reflective, alert mind, and lightness of being. I think those intentions will influence how you think, how you behave, and all the choices you make. And those choices include getting good sleep every night, getting some exercise every day, practicing some kind of mind-body technique, practice such as yoga or breathing exercises, managing your stress through meditation, cultivating healthy emotions, and making sure that your food is nourishing and not toxic. That's a start.
Dr. Chopra, our business, Growing Bolder, is all about rebranding aging, changing our years after 50 from a time of loss and limitation to passion and possibility. We recently interviewed Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn on this program, who won the Nobel Prize in 2009 for her work with telomeres, proving for the first time at a cellular level that not only how we live, but also how we think affects our age. How does our perception of aging, what the mind believes about aging, how does that actually affect the way we age?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that Dr. Blackburn published a paper recently, along with several colleagues of us, on the effects of meditation on telomeres and telomerase. A one-week experience at the Chopra Center in a meditation retreat caused telomerase to go up by 40%, which was a very remarkable finding. And then we also looked at genetics of aging, but also gene markers for inflammation and what is called homeostasis. And so we found that genes that were responsible for self-regulation, homeostasis, or self-repair went up very significantly, over 17 times some of them over baseline. And genes that caused inflammation, which is background in almost every disease, including cancer and heart disease and cardiovascular disease and autoimmune disease and degenerative diseases, all the genes that cause inflammation went down very significantly. Your chronological age does not have to be the same as your biological age. You can be biologically 20, even 25, even 30 years younger than your chronological age. So this is a really good time for those of us who look at aging as the opportunity to grow wiser and maintain the biology of youth. So I think there are many things. Perception of aging, if you say to yourself, I increase my physical and mental capacity every day, that changes your perception of aging. But then other things are very important, including mind-body coordination, meditation, exercise, making sure that you avoid toxicity in your life, whether it's toxic food or toxic people or toxic relationships or toxic environments. Make sure that love is a big experience in your life, and make sure that you keep your mind curious and always trying to understand the nature of our own existence. I think it's quite astonishing that we exist, and that the universe is fine-tuned for the presence of life and mind. So the more we explore our curious impulses, the more we exercise our imagination, the more we engage in social dialogue, the greater we will grow.
And finally, Dr. Chopra, we talk a lot about trying to make realizing that every moment that we have is a very valuable moment up until our final moment of life. And as a culture, we fear death to the point that we not only don't talk about it, we don't prepare for it. I've heard you say that you were never born and that you will never die. Doesn't our mortality give meaning to life? And I guess the follow-up to that is, what should we be doing as we age in order to prepare for what's next?
What is born in every moment of time is experience. So the difference actually at a very fundamental level between past, present, and future is not even a nanosecond. It's less than a nanosecond. So experience is constantly arising and subsiding. In other words, experience is born and dies in every moment of time. So your body is an experience. It's not who you are, because if you thought you were your body, you'd have to say which one: a baby's body, a teenager's body, a toddler's body, or the body of an old person. So the body is not who you are. The body is just another experience, just like the mind is an experience, and just like perception is an experience. That in which the experience occurs, which is consciousness or being, or if you want to use the word soul, that is not in time. It doesn't have a location in space, and it doesn't occupy time, and therefore it's timeless. And that timeless being was never born, nor is it subject to death. What is subject to birth and death is that being that basically experience is itself in time. So this is a complex idea, but it's addressed in the book. We are non-local beings having a local experience, which is another way of saying we are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Well, this certainly was a great experience for us and for all our listeners. We're very, very grateful for your time. He is a global pioneer of the alternative health movement. Check out his free personal transformation app called Jio, J-I-Y-O, available for iOS and Android devices, and his new book, You Are the Universe, available at all major online retailers. And you can stay up with all things Deepak Chopra at DeepakChopra.com. Thanks so much for your time.
Coming up, how 200 meters can equal 7 million views in just 5 days. A masterclass on active longevity is next on Growing Bolder. Growing Bolder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingbolder.com/new65plus.
Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton back with more Growing Bolder. And we all want to remain active and engaged in life for as long as we can. From our experience, active longevity doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah, nobody escapes the never-ending physical setbacks that accompany getting older. The question is, how many times will you bounce back? Unfortunately, many people get sick or injured and never really recover. That's why this next story is important. It's not really about setting records. It's about setting an example that we can all learn from. Just like a couple of high school superstars, John Corse and Ed Graves are studying the heat sheet at the Rowdy Gaines Masters Classic, underlining their events, checking out their lane assignments. Ed and John are the two oldest swimmers in a meet filled with former high school, college, and even Olympic athletes. And together with Betty Lorenzi and Joan Campbell, they're about to make swimming history. This fabulous foursome is attempting to break a world record in the 200-meter freestyle relay. Their ages?
86, 89, 92, and 93.
Combined, that puts them in the 360-plus age group. The record thereafter was set a decade ago by a team from Japan. Meet host and three-time Olympic gold medalist Rowdy Gaines stops the meet momentarily to let the crowd and the other swimmers know what's about to happen in lane number one.
Hey, Ed, are we giving you the jitters?
Well, a little bit, yeah.
92-year-old Ed Graves is the leadoff swimmer. Each team member will swim 50 meters, two laps, freestyle. Next up is the youngster in the group, 86-year-old Joan Campbell, who never swam a lap until she was 59.
I started swimming after my children quit.
And these may be the two biggest laps of her life because the team is now ahead of world record pace. The third leg is swum by 89-year-old Betty Lorenzi. Betty couldn't compete last year and had a pretty good excuse.
Unfortunately, she had to miss the meet last year due to the fact that she was recovering from a fall where she broke her neck. But she's back.
Battling back from a broken neck at age 89 and going for a world record. The anchorman is 93-year-old attorney John Corse, who is about to deliver the closing argument. As the seconds tick by, it's now apparent that the record will fall and that all here are witnessing a life-affirming demonstration of what's possible with passion and perseverance. What happens when ordinary people refuse to let life put them on the sidelines. They don't just break the world record, they obliterate it by 15 seconds, stunning a guy who knows something about breaking world records.
It's incredible, Mark. It just never ceases to amaze me that they can do things like this, you know. You and I were just talking about, we're going to be there 30 years, and I just can't even imagine. So it's proud. I had grandparents that never had this. They never exercised, and just to be able to have this, it just means a lot to me that they could be here at my meet, you know. It really was pretty cool.
It's a world record, but more importantly, it's a masterclass in active longevity.
Just keep trying despite everything that comes up, and everything does come up, but if you just stay at it, that's what counts.
I heard a rumor that you had a broken neck a year ago. That can't be true.
Oh, yes, it is.
How do you come back from a broken neck at your age to set a world record? What's the secret?
Swimming. Really, I'm serious. Swimming helped.
Accepting the never-ending challenge of aging and celebrating the never-ending opportunities. They just did one, and now they're anxious to do the other.
Well, I'd love to celebrate with champagne, but I'm on heart medicine right now, and they won't let me drink anything alcoholic. So I guess I'll celebrate with the Virgin Mary.
So John says he can't drink tonight. What about you?
I'm going to make it up for him.
And a few hours later, they toast one another, their new world record, and the good times still ahead.
I'm still learning about life. That's what's helped me along.
Do you still enjoy life?
Yes, especially when I break world records.
It's a relay team of hope, inspiration, and possibility, teaching by example the secrets to active longevity.
To be passionate about a sport that you enjoy, to really care about your health and take good care of yourself, and to pursue it with great gusto and enjoy life. And I need to make some changes in my life after this meet.
How much did that message resonate? Well, we put that video on Facebook and it had over 7 million views in 5 days. If you want more inspiration, check out the Growing Boulder Facebook page.
I'm picking up good vibrations. Up next, the man behind one of the greatest rock bands in history, the legendary Brian Wilson. This is Growing Boulder. Stay connected to Growing Boulder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures. The unmistakable sound of the Beach Boys and the opening track from their 1966 album Pet Sounds, which, by the way, Paul McCartney has called his favorite album ever, and it's been universally hailed as one of the finest records of the 20th century.
Yeah, the song, like so many of the Beach Boy classics, is the work of Brian Wilson, the creative musical genius and co-founder of the band. Wilson is responsible for some of the most groundbreaking and timeless popular music ever recorded. And of course, his turbulent life story has been well documented, from an abusive father to the tragic loss of his brothers to drug addiction and mental illness. And through it all, he remains a music force who is still recording, still touring, and still thrilling his millions of fans worldwide. Welcome to the program, the legendary Brian Wilson. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Man, we're doing great, and it seems like you are as well. You're in the midst of a world tour. Brian Wilson presents Pet Sounds, in which you and Al Jardine and your band performed the album for a final time in honor of its 50th anniversary. What's it like touring as you approach your 75th birthday?
Well, it's still a fun experience for me. I still like to sing and, you know, play and sing on stage and share the spotlight with Al Jardine and Blondie Chaplin.
And Mark said that you're about to turn 75. Brian, can you believe that? What does it feel like to be 74?
Well, it feels good.
Since your tour is all about Pet Sounds, it is now considered, you know, hindsight is 2020, a timeless masterpiece, decades ahead of its time, the forebearer of the conceptual album. But when it was released in 1966, it was met largely with a lukewarm reception from the critics. Were you bothered by that as a 24-year-old?
No, I knew that people weren't going to like it right off the bat. But I knew that after a few years, people would start to like it.
That's amazing, Brian. I would think at that young age that it would be so important to get that critical buy-in. Maybe not as important as now, but that would have crushed, you know, would have crushed anybody else.
Well, I think when people first hear it, they like the harmonies. I think after a few plays, then they start to like the lyrics.
And then they just love every little bit of it. You know, not only are you a musical icon, it turns out you're a pretty darn good writer as well. Your second book, the very revealing I Am Brian Wilson, a memoir, came out a few months ago. In it, Brian, you are very open, talking about, among other things, the abuse you suffered at the hands of your father, your substance abuse, and even your mental illness, which has now been clinically diagnosed as bipolar schizoaffective disorder. Do you still hear the voices, what you've described as auditory hallucinations that have troubled you for decades? Are they still there?
Yeah, they're still there. Not quite as much, but they're still there.
You know, one of the reasons we love your story, Brian, and we're so proud of the courage that you've had to go public with what you've been through, is we all in our lives fight some kind of demons. They may not be the same as yours, but there's a great lesson in your ability to fight back, to be courageous and to overcome. What made you decide that you would be an example and you would allow this to go public?
Well, I think the people that saw the movie would probably stop taking drugs after they saw what I went through, you know?
He's talking about the movie Love and Mercy, which was the highly acclaimed biopic that detailed Brian Wilson's relationship with the other band members and, of course, the domineering Eugene Landy. Were you pleased, Brian, with that film and the way in which you were represented?
Yeah, I was very pleased. I thought I was portrayed very accurately, and I thought it came across very good.
You know, Mark was telling me before we were talking about your story, Brian, how much you have endured, far more than even many rock stars of your generation. What has been responsible for your ability to not only survive, but to thrive in the aftermath?
Well, I've had a lot of practice, you know. I've been in the business for 52 or 53 years, so I've had a lot of practice.
Folks, we're talking with Brian Wilson, who has been called a modern-day Mozart, Beethoven, and Tchaikovsky all rolled into one. What do you feel about your place in music, Brian? What do you think when people call you a Mozart or a Beethoven?
Well, I think they're very bright. I think I deserve to be called all those.
And you know, when somebody has the skills you do, Brian, and the creativity, that doesn't seem to go away as we age or get older. Do you still find yourself feeling that creativity, and do you still write songs?
Well, I'm going to start writing songs for my new rock and roll album later this year, which should be a great album.
And a lot of the songs in the past have been like I Love You songs or Gee, Isn't It a Great Day. What will your songs be about now?
Well, I haven't decided yet what to write about, but it will have some love songs and then some just like crazy, like energetic songs, you know, that like make people feel good.
Well, you know, you have made a lot of people feel really good for decades. As we mentioned at the top of this interview, you are still touring with Al Jardine, but your brothers Dennis and Carl have both died, and your relationship with your cousin Mike Love has been strained, to say the least. Have you reconciled, Brian? Do you guys talk at all these days?
I haven't talked with Mike for 4.5 years.
And why is that? Is that your choice or his, or it just hasn't happened?
It just hasn't happened. We haven't wanted to talk to each other for a while. I don't really, I'm not planning to do any more work with Mike, you know.
But yet he's touring as the Beach Boys, and you and Al are really the Beach Boys. Does that bother you at all, or are you beyond that?
I'm beyond that, yeah, I'm beyond that.
Hey, Brian, I don't know if you know this. Well, I'm sure you do. We've had a number of big-time rock stars on our radio program here, and we always like to ask people, you know, who are your influences? Who is it that you respect and admire the most? And do you know that almost every one of them mentions your name?
I can't believe that. Really? Is that really true?
And I think it, you know, it's because you've done things that other people didn't quite have the courage to. I mean, you followed what was in your heart. Where did that courage come from in you?
Came from inside of me, deep inside of me.
You know, we opened this interview with a little bit from the song Wouldn't It Be Nice, and the opening lyric to that song is, "Wouldn't it be nice if we were older?" Now that you are older, Brian, is it nice? Are you enjoying life as much now as you did when you were 24?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what is life like now for you, Brian?
Well, life is like an experience. Each day is like a new challenge for me to survive and get through it. And of course, to listen to music and think about writing songs.
Well, you obviously are a guy who sees the world in many, many layers, you know, a symphonic version, if you will. Is there a Brian Wilson takeaway? Is there something that you have learned from everything you've experienced? What's the moral of your story that you'd like others to know?
Well, my advice to people who write songs is to not write half a song, write a whole song.
And how about life, Brian? You've learned so much about just surviving the ups and downs. What can we learn from what you've been through?
You can learn that you should not take drugs, not take heavy drugs or alcohol or anything. Smoking, no smoking.
You know what we want to do? We want to say a great big thank you to you for the soundtrack of our lives from some of the greatest music any of us has ever heard, and not just because it's nice to listen to, because it helps us open our minds and experience and inspires us to be creative in our own right. He's the musical soul of one of the most enduring rock bands of all time and one of the greatest musical innovators in history, writing masterpieces like Don't Worry Baby, Good Vibrations, Wouldn't It Be Nice, God Only Knows, and so many others. Check out his memoir, Wouldn't It Be Nice, My Own Story, and catch him at the Pet Sounds World Tour. Tour dates are available at brianwilson.com. What an interesting interview from a fascinating man.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
Up next, she was a true trailblazer, one of the first female comedy writers in Hollywood, and now she's dishing about it all in her hilarious new memoir. Susan Silver is next.
The world could show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be.
We've got news. Watch.growingboulder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingboulder.com is now live. This is Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. That guy right over there is Big Bad Billy Schaefer. And you know, one of the most fulfilling yet most difficult ways of actually growing Boulder is to break the barriers. Being among the first to accomplish something important and opening doors that never existed before so that others might follow. And our next guest actually changed television back in the 1970s when she became one of the very first female writers. She wrote, among others, episodes of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Maude, Love American Style, and a whole lot more.
And you know, Mark, not only did she prove she could do it, she brought with her a true, fresh female perspective to the shows that we all watched. How did it happen? What was it like? And what's life been like since? Well, you can find out in her brand new book entitled Hot Pants in Hollywood. She is one of our favorite guests. Here's Susan Silver. Susan, how are you?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I could never live up to all that, so goodbye.
My goodness, what took you so long to pull back those hot pants and get that book out?
Well, the hot pants, I'm ashamed to say, I actually used to wear them to meetings. TV Guide did an article about me, Hot Pants in Hollywood. I don't know what I was thinking, but, hey, it got me in TV Guide. So, anyway, the last few years I've been trying to do this book, and it's finally up and out on all the sites, Amazon and everywhere, and I'm so excited. The second title is Sex, Secrets, and Sitcoms. So you can pick whichever you're interested in, and I know which one you're interested in, Bill.
I love me a good sitcom. That's
I knew you'd say that.
You know, when you spend your career breaking barriers like Mark was talking about, I mean, you are a pioneer in what you did. Sometimes it never gets any easier. How difficult has it been simply just to get your memoir, which is fascinating and historically significant, how difficult was just to get that published?
Well, it was hard because it's interesting how publishers have their thoughts, the traditional publishers do, like, oh, millennials don't care about such and such, and people don't buy real books anymore. So I'm out to prove that wrong. And for the baby boomers, I hope it'll be sort of a walk down memory lane of all the things we grew up with, because it's really about more than the showbiz. It's about everything that boomers go through, love and loss and sickness and divorce and taking care of your parents and always looking for a new passion. And that's kind of the thing. I would like it to be inspirational.
You know, Susan, we've talked to, as often as we can, people that have been responsible for breaking barriers of all sorts. And it seems like many times they don't really realize they're breaking a barrier or that's not their goal. They're just simply trying to do what they love. As you look back and wrote this and kind of processed what you accomplished, are you amazed that you were able to do what you did at the time that you did?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is you really don't feel like you're breaking a barrier or doing anything. I mean, obviously there were very few women writing, so it was hard to get in the door. But once my darling mentor, who's passed on, Gary Marshall, got me that first meeting, I had such an easy time of it because the Mary Tyler Moore guys were looking for women. They sort of made that their mission, and it was the beginning of feminism. So I must say I had kind of an easy time of it. But also, at the same time, I didn't realize how crucial and iconic the show was going to be, that it still lasts. And, of course, with Mary's passing recently, I did a lot of press. And one of the things that I did tell was a story on how I wanted to be a writer when I worked at Rowan and Martin's Laughlin, but they wouldn't let me because they said the guys want to walk around in their underwear in the apartment, and they want to, like, I'm going to say it, pass gas and things, and we didn't want a woman in there with it. So I said, gee, passing gas almost cost me my career, but fortunately the Mary Tyler Moore guys didn't care about that.
You know what's interesting too, Susan, is that she got so much credit for portraying a woman finding her way through a male-dominated world, but there you were actually doing it for real.
Well, the good thing about the show, and I think why it resonated, was it was the first time there were a predominance of women writers. And as I've said so many times, I never went in, and they never asked us, be a feminist and do this. I was just there talking about my life. I was trying to do the best job I could and open the door for other women, and we kind of were living our lives along with it at the same time. What's so meaningful to me, and why I hope that younger people as well as our growing bolder people care, is that the show kind of came at a pivotal time in women's lives. And to relive that and to see how far we've come in many ways and how far we still have to go in other ways, it kind of is an important point in television and I hope in all of our lives.
Folks, we are talking to Susan Silver, who was one of the very first female writers in Hollywood. She's got a new memoir out called Hot Pants in Hollywood. And Susan, as you mentioned, there were very few female writers prior to the group that you came up with, but there were a lot of female performers. And folks out there, because this is the radio, may not have had the advantage that Bill and I have had to see you. And you are a very attractive, personable woman. Why did you not try to perform instead of write?
Oh, that's so lovely of you. First of all, I'll tell you exactly why, and I write about it in the book. I had the lead in my senior class play, and I had an accident prior to going on stage. I was so nervous I wet myself, so I don't think I'm cut out to be a performer. Actually, the truth of it is I've done a lot of television, and I do radio, too, just being myself. But it's a different skill to be an actor and to remember your lines and to know how to deliver it over and over. And I'm a little too spontaneous for that, as you can tell already.
Where did that confidence or fearlessness or courage come from?
Well, you know something, you don't think of yourself in that way, but in doing the book, I have to say, I realized that I was so much more resilient than I thought. I had cancer, I almost died, I took care of my parents, all those things which, given my kind of, as I say in the book, if I cut my finger as a child, it was like, oh my God, surgery. So you wouldn't think you'd grow up to be able to handle things, but we all do, and we all have to. But the important thing is to keep reinventing. After I was in television, I got to work with a lot of Holocaust-related organizations. I was at the UN for the Wiesenthal Center. I did those things which I found my own passion. It's so important to keep finding new passions. And then, of course, in my book, I have kind of a search for love, because I had my column, The Search for Mr. Adequate, and I have some interesting stuff there, too, and a little bit of a surprise ending. And I did want to say one thing. For the growing bolder audience primarily, if you go to my website, which is www.hotpantsinhollywood, of course, there's a free bonus chapter, which is not in the book. Now, I have to warn you, it's a little racy. It's what I did on my 50th birthday, and we all know that 50 is a big milestone.
Hey, before we let you go, Susan, and that's a great offer for our guests. The other thing that I think everybody would love to hear is what's the takeaway? What's the moral of the Susan Silver story?
What is the moral? Just keep going, and life ain't over yet. You know, I think that we of our generation have gone through a lot. We're still at it. We're still reinventing ourselves. And the most important thing, once I got this fortune cookie, I say in the book, it was hysterical. It said, every man needs a porpoise in his life. So I kept looking for my porpoises, and I found them.
You know what, folks? There are so many things that you will love about this book. Great stories, great people, insight into the shows that we all watched. But best of all, there's inspiration in there. There's something for all of us to take away that can help us live rich, meaningful lives. Susan is a riot. She's brilliant. She's really somebody that everyone should know about. And the book is called Hot Pants in Hollywood. And for more information, to see the chapter she was talking about, just go to hotpantsinhollywood.com. Great visit with Susan Silver. Much luck with the book.
Coming up, are we headed for a caregiving crisis? One of America's top experts on caregiving has an optimistic view on the critical but stressful role so many are finding themselves in. That's next on Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
You know, Bill, I am a member of a very small but very rewarding breakfast club. There are three of us, and we meet once a month with no real agenda other than to update one another on what we're working on and what we're thinking about. And the idea is that we will learn from and inspire one another and hopefully figure out a way that we might work together on a project that we're all passionate about. And one of the members of this little breakfast club is a woman that I've known about for years, but met for the first time at our very first breakfast, and now I'm very proud to call her a friend.
You have been holding out on me. She's one of the most amazing people anywhere. She's well known nationally as the creator of MyCaregivingCoach.com, Mark, which is a website, as you know, dedicated to the caregiver's well-being. She's an author as well. I think she's written four books, including the award-winning Enrich Your Caregiving Journey and Words of Care. And she's the creator and host of two radio shows, Caregiver and Physician Conversations and Caregiver Speak. So I don't know how she has time to have breakfast with you.
Well, you know, you're not even done with what she does, Bill. She's the past chair of the board at the National Center for Creative Aging and the founder and president of the PAPS Charitable Foundation for the Arts, which supports initiatives that are at the intersection of health and wellness. A fascinating woman. We're thrilled to talk to Marjorie PAPS Steinmetz. Hey, Margie, how are you?
I am just great today, and thank you all for that wonderful introduction. You know, all that's taken place over the last decade, so, you know, it sounds like a lot, but one thing just led to another.
You know, Margie, I am always energized after our meetings because you are so passionate about helping others to live healthy, meaningful lives, especially as we age. What is it about the arts that inspires you so much, and why do you think they have such a positive impact on our health?
Well, you know, as we age, Mark, one of the big issues is we lose friends, you know, life changes, maybe we lose a spouse, we retire, maybe don't have a job anymore. And not all, but many older people have a real sense of grieving, the need for belongingness, perhaps sitting in the home and being bored, all of those things. And the arts are really the perfect connector. In fact, they always have been, right, for our whole lives. But as we age, I think the arts are wonderful because as people get older anyway, I think many of us gain lots of new perspectives. And arts are such a way for us to be able to talk about our perspectives, maybe write a poem, maybe sing a song, maybe create a song, maybe write a story. So there are so many ways that older people can connect themselves back to their memories and to one another. And that's why the arts are really my favorite thing.
You know, the arts are such an unusual thing, Marjorie. We've had so many people on our program here who never considered themselves artists in the least their entire lives. But once they're exposed to it, then they flourish. And then in some cases, they become accomplished at art. Do you believe that we all have artistic talent?
Absolutely. I think the creative soul exists in every single one of us as a God-given talent, if you will. And so for so many reasons, maybe you didn't somebody didn't have any arts instruction or music instruction in school. You know, the schools are so focused on left brain learning, like mathematics and so on, that the arts can get tuned out for a good part of our lives. And then when we go to work, maybe our jobs, often our jobs, tune out that aspect. And then when we get home at night, we're so tired, certainly, listening to music even, or going out to a concert or something. Maybe that's something that hasn't happened until we get to be 50 or 60 years old and we have time to be able to say, oh, I could try this. This could be fun.
You know, Marjorie, it seems from an outside perspective that you have a special interest in supporting programs that work at the community level. And the concept of wellness as the center of community is fairly revolutionary, but it definitely feels like it's the wave of the future, that if we want to help people age healthily, we've got to get involved with community programs. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. And one of the things that, as you know, one of the things that I think can help make that happen quickly is building a group of ambassadors, say here in Orlando, around the community, arts people, certainly, people of faith communities, agencies, social service agencies and the like, hospitals. And if you can develop a group of ambassadors who have that same commitment to the sense of body, mind, spirit, the wellness of the body, the mind, and the spirit, which, of course, the arts speak to in every way, then, you know, it's that ripple effect. It's not one person. It's not the three of us at our breakfast meetings. It's a group of people that can get that message out to as much of our population as ever.
You know, the whole caregiving concept is really exploding. I know you were a caregiver to both of your parents and your former husband as well. And you discovered, as everybody does, that it is a very, very difficult job. But you didn't run away when it was over. You wrote books about it. You launched radio programs. What was it about the experience that you wanted to share, that you needed to share?
Well, you know, I made the mistakes, didn't I, looking back. And there wasn't a whole lot of help when I was a caregiver. Now, it's gotten better, but, you know, the resources were pretty few. I mean, most of the resources were logistical things, like how to find a walker, where to go to get the best price on medicine. But it wasn't so much about caring for the caregiver's body, mind, and spirit. It wasn't much about how to take care of yourself. You know, that old thing about putting the oxygen mask on yourself first before you help others. And so I really felt that there was a need to fill that gap of helping caregivers think about how to create their own wellness, even in just a few moments every day. People say to me, well, how can I do that if I'm caring for someone? Well, you know, in 5 minutes' time, to do a breathing exercise, or to listen to a piece of music, or to just sit and, you know, reflect. All of these are quick and easy ways to keep ourselves as well as possible.
Folks, we're talking with Marjorie Papp-Steinmetz, who, among other things, is one of the nation's leading experts on caregivers. Margie, caregivers, as you know, are a large and growing group. In fact, some believe we are on the cusp of a caregiving crisis because there are more than 34 million unpaid caregivers in the U.S. Most are unprepared and easily overwhelmed. You know, give us a couple of takeaways. What are some of the keys to becoming a successful caregiver?
Well, I think one of the things is to always ask for help. You don't have to just say, help me, but rather find a friend, find someone at your church or synagogue, find a person you trust, and begin with one person at a time and give them a very specific thing they can do to help you. Like, would you bring dinner over on Tuesday night at 6:00? And, you know, once that person does that and the caregiver says, wow, that was great. That was a great help to me and my husband. Then what happens is it's kind of like, oh, I could do that again. I could ask for more. I could ask more people to help me. I think developing, again, as a caregiver, your own set of ambassadors.
What makes you feel that the next two or three decades could be the best of your life?
You know what? I get much more back than I ever give. I have such a great time working with people of all ages. We have just finished an experimental and inaugural group of medical students out of the UCF College of Medicine. We just finished up that course to watch young people who are about to become doctors engage in examining their own artistic creativity, their own spirituality, and thinking about, how is that going to help me when I go out and help patients and their families? That is such an inspiration to me. It makes my day.
You know, it's amazing how you can actually hear the passion come right out of her voice. And Mark, it's no wonder that you are so happy to be in this Breakfast Club, because it sounds like it would be a very uplifting, fascinating experience. She is definitely one of the most amazing people in our community, not only for helping others make the world a better place through her Pabst Charitable Foundation, but doing much of the heavy lifting on her own. And you can hear it's light as can be to her, but she's bringing us all along so far. You can learn more about Marjorie Pabst Steinmetz and her work at mycaregivingcoach.com.
We leave you today with a mini rant, if it's okay, Mr. Schaefer. Folks, don't blame baby boomers for not wanting to retire at 65. Thank them. Retirement is an outdated concept. Most people don't want to retire at 65, and most can't afford to, even if they wanted to, because we're living longer and healthcare is more expensive than ever. Living with passion and purpose and finding a way to monetize that passion and purpose when necessary or desired is the new retirement. Boomers are transforming this life stage for the better and creating new options that will enhance the lives of everyone, including you, in the decades ahead. We'll see you next time right here on Growing Bolder.